This is the DPHRO and Rothenberg podcast. Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker by asking it to play 98.7 ESPN. This is DPHRO and Rothenberg.
It's Damer and DePietro, and
how can you get angry at Omar?
Dave Rothenberg and
when you mispronounce your own name.
It's Damer and DePietro, and
first of all, I blame Gordon for that.
How is Gordon at fault?
Rather than just go with what the show was called, I try to incorporate him on the fly, which clearly I can't do right, and I screwed it up.
It's Damer and DePietro, and
everybody?
This is DPHRO and Rothenberg.
Everybody but Damer.
On 98.7 ESPN.
There's something so wonderful about the everybody in that drop, by the way. Everybody?
I was confused. I mean, I had to, couldn't just leave it.
Was there any more conversation from Damer during that show?
No.
That was it?
That was it. You know what that was like? That was like the Alabama call we played yesterday.
Oh, how good was that?
And see, I didn't lay out. Like, I did what the analyst should have done and just came in and said something.
It's fair. I mean, you sounded overwhelmed. You sounded like it wasn't your finest moment, but at least you realized you had to talk.
Well, the league is going to get themselves $250,000.
I love that. I mean, honestly, the guy, I think he's like 67 years old. He's, and I love it, he's a petulant child. Like, the first words he speaks when his beloved Alabama Crimson Tide lose to Texas A&M is not Texas A&M won 41-38, field goal at the buzzer. None of that. The first thing he says is, they stormed the field and they're going to get fined for this one. Shame on them.
In that moment, though, I mean, that very rarely happens. I mean, what was the streak? It was 100 straight against unranked opponents. Had never lost to an assistant coach.
Correct.
So, I mean, yeah, you're not wrong. And that's not like that's, you know, a guy new to the job. He's a legend, this guy.
Eli Gold.
He's a legend. He's
phenomenal. Yeah. But that was not his finest moment.
Maybe that's why he can do it, though. Knowing that he's a legend, he can get away with it.
This entire time you're listening to, Texas A&M has won. They storm the field. They're all excited.
Storm the field, yeah.
And nothing. And now, at this moment, the color analyst looks at him like, are you going to say anything?
He's got to step up in that moment, though. Say something.
And here's what he says. The first thing he says.
He can't. Well, the league is going to get themselves $250,000.
He's me.
Yeah, but there's no way you get away with that. I mean, you have to feel real comfortable with your position.
To do something like that?
Yeah.
It's so good, though. It's so good. Because you can tell that is an immature man.
Well, of course he is. I mean, in that moment...
You say, of course he is. Most broadcasters are not going to stop talking and telling you what's happening in the game.
No, most aren't.
You know what you get? You would expect a Texas A&M kicks a 33-yard field goal and Alabama loses 41-38. Like, that's what you would expect.
He was disgusted.
Not nothing.
He was disgusted. Didn't know what to say.
So he said nothing.
Chose silence.
Said nothing.
God forbid that was Dave Rothenberg. You would have heard just stuff smashed. Yeah, you probably rip your headset off.
I couldn't be the voice of a team that I loved. No way.
No, you'd be screaming. You'd dump multiple
the
times.
Giants, you'd have to dump it. I'd be escorted out. Be a disaster. DiPietro and Rothenberg presented by Progressive Insurance. So the story that is really carrying the water today for sports talk, and really it goes beyond that, is John Gruden. He resigns. He had no choice. The emails became public. The New York Times had an article last night about, I mean, it was just tons of them, emails between him and a whole host of guys that he would say terrible things about. At least it's not like he doesn't like one race or one creed or one type of person. He doesn't like anybody. He resigns last night. The only thing that I think could have happened with the Raiders and with Gruden.
I think when you watch a Monday Night Football countdown last night and you had Shefty's report, that, you know, more emails were being sent to Vegas for Mark Davis and the organization to go through and decide what they wanted to do, that you could just feel that him being fired, resigning, whatever it ended up being, it was imminent. And it happened, I mean, it happened quick. It happened last night. But there's no after you read those articles and you read the emails, there was no way he could get back in that locker room and lead that team.
No, and I think that before the second batch, that they were going to keep him. Like Mark Davis loves him, and Mark Davis desperately wanted him to lead this Raiders organization back into prominence. So I don't know whether they would have suspended him or – and he was so disgusted the other day, which I think is really repulsive. You know, I've answered the question, and I'm not doing it again, and kind of leave me alone. But with the second batch, there was nothing that could be done. He had to resign. If he didn't resign, he'd have to have been fired there.
But I think there'd still be questions. Like, I don't care what, you know, Josh Jacobs said. I've been in plenty of locker rooms. Like, something like that comes out with the first email and what he had to say about Demoris Smith. Like, players are talking. And, you know, you saw what they looked like against Chicago. I mean, they played one of their worst games of the season. So it clearly had an effect on them. And it was going to affect his ability to lead that team. Now, not everybody on that team, but, I mean, there would be a group of players that would look at him sideways and not trust what he's telling them. And now this comes out. I mean, and you mentioned it, how much Mark Davis likes him. I mean, John Gruden signed a 10-year, $100 million deal. He was the face of the franchise.
He sure was, but you can't have that. You can't have that as the face of your franchise.
Well, because you know what it means. I mean, the Las Vegas Raiders are a $3.4 billion corporation. And when you hire your coach, especially someone like John Gruden, I mean, as the face of your franchise, he is your identity. So when people ask or they think about the Vegas Raiders, who are the Vegas Raiders? The first thought is, well, they're John Gruden. And what does John Gruden and the Vegas Raiders stand for? And this stuff comes out, and you can't have that.
No.
You cannot have
it. And it's a bad look. And how about the fact that they were inquiring about Washington.
Yep.
They weren't even looking for John Gruden. He just happened to be stupid enough to have these thoughts. But secondly, to put them down in print form and send them around the country to different people. How dumb can you be? And they weren't looking for him. They stumbled upon him and then opened up a case against him. And a couple days later, now here we are with that, where he's now unemployed.
Yeah, but I think it speaks to a bigger problem with the NFL of all the leagues. I mean, he was sending emails to Bruce Allen, right? Who he had a previous relationship with in Oakland and then in Tampa. I mean, he's the president and general manager of the Washington football team, who at the time
Correct.
Was the Washington Redskins. And we've had problems with the Washington Redskins name for how many years that they would, I mean, Daniel Snyder refused to change. And the only reason why these emails came to light is because Washington football team wasn't being investigated for, the cheerleading scandal, you had workplace misconduct. I mean, the NFL is just, they're hesitant to change. I mean, they're resistant to change.
Right.
I mean, they pretend to be this progressive league, but I mean,
that's what they want to be seen as, but they're not.
They're not.
No.
I mean, you're talking about two guys with, I mean, in big-time positions of power, right? I mean, Bruce Allen, who ended up hiring, you know, John Gruden's brother as the coach, and now John Gruden, when he gets this job in Vegas, I mean, is responsible for hiring his own GM, Mike Mayock.
And who has no experience.
No, and they're having conversations for years going after the commissioner, the owners. There was, emails about Michael Sam and
right.
You know,
don't draft this guy.
Homophobic emails and, you know, pictures of cheerleaders topless and going after, you know, Joe Biden and, I mean, you name it, Demoris Smith. It was everybody. He went after everybody. And now
that's
you're
right,
asking
Caitlyn
this guy,
Jenner. I mean, he went after everybody. And you know, there's this old belief in the it's the old boys club. And there's a lot of people that say, no, it's not like that anymore. Well, how come a guy like Eric Bieniemy, how come some of these other coaches, how come minorities are not hired more? Well, you know what? It's hard to argue at this moment that, in fact, it is the old boys club. Because here you have John Gruden, who feels like he can send emails to many different people with these horrible thoughts, and it's totally fine.
Yeah, and this is years and years and years, and no one says anything. I mean,
no,
Bruce
years.
Allen never stops him and says, hey, like, John, I don't know if you're trying to be funny here or whatever you're trying to be, but this is not acceptable. But it's not just, I mean, and we talked about this in the last hour. You can get why there's skepticism from someone like Eric Bieniemy, like you said, or even someone like Louis Riddick, who's looking to be a GM. That this is, I mean, these are two guys that are responsible for making hires, and this is how they feel behind closed doors when they're in this you know, their little
because they're comfortable
where they feel comfortable.
They feel like they can do and say whatever it is that they want.
But Dave, here's the crazy part, though. It's not just, I mean, it's just not what he said about Damaris Smith. It's, I mean, he's got an openly gay player on his team, right? There's, you know, there's women that are now officials that are working as coaches that I'm sure work in, you know, all the different departments with the Vegas Raiders. And this is who you want representing you is,
well,
John Gruden?
I don't think they want this representing them, and that's why they push quickly to have this resolved. But I don't that if this never came to light, John Gruden would be within this league for a long time.
No, but you can understand why people would question, like why a woman would question, how come I can't advance in this field, or you know, one of these black coordinators like an Eric Bieniemy, like how come I haven't got my shot yet? Right, like you can understand why they question that
of
stuff.
Of course,
when this is
and
the,
I did,
this is the
I did beforehand
process.
As well. I always have. Like Eric Bieniemy should be. It's ridiculous. He's not a head coach in this league. Louis Riddick should be a GM in this league.
Yeah, exactly right. And we find ourselves like, after the coaching cycle goes through, and you know Eric Bieniemy, who I mean, there are star players that have suggested to their GMs or their owners, like, this is the guy I would like as our head coach, and still doesn't get a chance, doesn't get an opportunity to be a head coach. Like, you can understand why there's the conversations afterwards about, are there ulterior motives as to why he doesn't have a job? Yeah, I mean, it's a problem, man. And it's bad for John Gruden. It's a terrible look for John Gruden. I don't think he'll be involved.
I don't think he can ever work again. Maybe, period.
No, but I mean, the one, I don't want to say positive to come out of this, but I guess maybe that's the only word to use to come out of this, is that this has come to light. And you do get an opportunity to kind of see some of the conversations that go on behind closed doors. And the fact now that he does end up losing his job, it's, people need to understand that what he was saying, these emails back and forth, is unacceptable.
Yeah.
That's not what we're about as a league. We're moving forward. Like, it's okay to be Carl Nassib and be openly gay and play in the NFL. It's okay to have women coaches. It's okay to have women officials. Like, we're moving in that direction. Like, get with the times here.
Or get out of the way.
Exactly right.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast.
And welcome aboard.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
I was unbelievable in cornhole.
Vacation
terrific.
Is time to experiment a little bit.
Would you stop it?
It couldn't have been any worse than, I mean, your fiasco at the Mets tailgate.
I was drunk to the point I could barely stand up.
You were terrible.
I'm telling you, I didn't realize I was this good. I was a terrific cornhole player.
Well, all right. So now, I mean, redeem yourself. Next tailgate, whenever that is.
Oh, well, can we play before we get drunk?
No, the whole point of tailgating, you know, you got to do it. You got to do it. Don't be, I mean, to the point where, you know, Canty was dropping sausages and everything else. But, I mean, you can't go in.
Canty left. He left.
Yeah, he had to. He had to.
It's like, all right, now let's go into the game. I can't go into the game. Why? I'm a mess.
I still can't believe we had a call to the K show on the bus. Remember
that? You guys.
Yeah, that was rough.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
That was a fun time, though.
Yeah, it was.
You got to be a little liquored up, though, playing cornhole. You can't
listen,
sober,
a little
sober.
Bit fine. A little lubed up, fine. But not like that. That was too much. It was not good.
No, you were right where I needed you to be.
No.
You were cruising altitude. That was right where I needed you to be.
No, I can't go that crazy. I turn around. We're at the game. I turn around. A man is like naked.
No, he's eating the ice cream off on his naked belly.
And then buys me an ice cream. It was a fun time.
We had an unbelievable good game, too.
Well, the Mets scored like 11 in the first.
They destroyed Miami.
Yeah, that was fun. All right. So speaking of fun, I'm sure in Boston they're having a lot of fun right now. I got to tell you, firstly, before we even get to the Yankees component of this, really impressed with the Red Sox. I didn't think they were at the same level as Tampa. I thought the bullpen would be the huge difference. I thought Tampa was going to kill them. The Red Sox win this in four.
Yeah, because the Red Sox bullpen turned into a strength of their team. I mean, it really did. Starters, I mean, the starting pitchers were whatever, but their bullpen was lights out. And, I mean, Tampa fought back in those last two games because that's what they do. I mean, this season, seventh, eighth, and ninth inning scoring, Tampa was the best in baseball, so you'd expect them to fight back. They did. And Red Sox, man, they found a way to pull it out. old school baseball. Win one for old school baseball.
Yep, that's right. And that brings me kind of to the Yankees correlation here. You watch everything by the numbers, everything analytics. Don't bunt. Don't give up an out. And then you watch the Red Sox, and they do just the opposite. This whole premonition that a manager has little to do with the outcome of the game, they don't play by that in Boston. I'll tell you that. They let him do what he wants to do. And look at them. Rick, I mean, it's proof positive. They win the World Series. He goes away. They're awful. He comes back. They're in the American League Championship Series.
Yeah, there's something to be said about that. Absolutely. I don't think it's just him, obviously. I mean, you look at their team. They have, you know, guys that have had really good seasons. I mean, Devers hit that big home run last night. They got good players. But I think he's, and he's earned that. He's won a World Series, right? But I think he's one of those managers now that is allowed by the front office to take the numbers and use them how he sees fit to use them. And he has the latitude to make, you know, certain decisions at certain times that may go against some of the analytics.
But isn't that what you want? Like, am I missing something? If I'm a fan of whoever, I want to have trust and faith in my manager that he's allowed to do that.
Yeah, that's what you want. I mean, in a perfect world, that's exactly what you want. But I mean, I think your manager has to earn that. And I think the front office, GM, have to be willing to give him the ability to do that. But you also have to have a manager. I don't know. My personal opinion is I think that Aaron Boone should be back. Because if Brian Cashman is coming back, I don't know who you're replacing Aaron Boone with except someone else that's just like Aaron Boone.
But are you going to let Aaron Boone in Game 4 of the American League Division Series lay down a bunt or play by feel? I don't know that you'll ever do that.
Okay, but you're missing my point, though, here, is that it has to have, you know, you have to have one of two things happen for that to be possible. Either the GM who hired the manager is comfortable with that because he trusts him, or whoever the manager is has earned that right. Like, going into hiring Terry Francona, like, you know, like, this guy has earned the right to make some of his own decisions. We'll give him the numbers, and we'll know every opportunity to use those numbers, but there'll be certain times during the game where he's going to manage the way he wants.
He can go off the cuff, right?
Exactly. I mean, Alex Cora has won a, you know, World Series, so there's probably a comfort level there between him and Heim Bloom that he knows what he's doing, which clearly he does, because the Red Sox stunk last year, and all of a sudden they're in the ALCS. So whatever they're doing is working. I don't know if Brian Cashman is, A, willing to do that, or B, on the reverse of that, if Aaron Boone has the kind of personality where he's willing to go against what he's being told. I think Cora has more of that kind of personality. Like, hey, I appreciate the numbers, but if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down my way, making some of my own decisions.
That's what I want. I mean, I'm sorry. And I know the Yankees want the opposite. That's, if I'm a fan of a team, that's what I want. I want to believe in my manager and know that he's going to play by his gut in conjunction. I'm not saying to eliminate analytics. That would be ridiculous. But you have to have a combination of the manager has a pulse of the team, and you combine that with the numbers and the stats and everything.
Well, but I also believe, I mean, there's something to be said. I get with analytics, you know, they want to discredit and discount, you know, somebody's experience in the game. Because, I mean, a lot of these guys that do the analytics have not played, you know, baseball at a high level, whatever sport it is at a high level. So in order for them to advance or get the jobs that they have, they have to eliminate the importance of experience, right? Because they don't have the experience. I'll never be as a guy who went to Harvard who's never played baseball on the same level as Aaron Boone or Alex Cora, because those guys played. They've been in a clubhouse. They've been in big moments. So the only way I'm at their level is if I, with numbers, can discredit all that experience. And that's what they're doing, essentially, because what you're talking about is less about your gut and more about, you know, A, what you're watching, right? Like what you're seeing with your own two eyes. And it's also like having a feel for, okay, I've been in this moment. I understand the pressure in this moment. I know how my guy is going to react in this moment, right? Or if I get out to the mound and the numbers are telling me, like, you know, this, whoever it is, it could be, let's say it's, you know, Nathan Eovaldi, right? You know, he's not great a third time through the order, but I look in his eyes, and when I ask him, you know, what do you have left? He tells me, listen, I got this. And I can tell by that conversation.
But that doesn't exist in the Bronx.
I can trust him.
It doesn't exist.
That does not exist, no.
And I think the Yankees would be better off if they had a little bit more of that and a little bit less of what, in fact, they do. It says do not bunt in that situation. But you know what? They did it, and I think it's a huge portion of the reason they won the game last night. So I mean, take it for what it's worth. But the Yankees on the outside and the Red Sox are now back in the American League Championship Series.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast.
I'll give it to you whenever you want it.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at DR on ESPN.
You want to get to some calls before Mike Tannenbaum joins us this morning?
Yeah, can I make one point, though?
Yeah.
And I know Yankees fans don't want to hear this, and me defending Aaron Boone, because they want their pound of flesh. They want someone to pay the price for them losing in that wild card game. I will say, though, is you can only manage what you have. And what I mean by that is that Aaron Boone is given certain personnel that have certain skill sets, right? So, I mean, you saw how he managed when it was Greg Allen and Velasquez and Florial. And Yankees fans liked it, right?
They loved it.
Yeah, stealing bases. They were aggressive because he was managing what he had. That's clearly not the vision that Brian Cashman has for this team.
Well, maybe.
In all honesty, what you saw yesterday with that bunt, I know analytics says don't bunt. Listen, I like it. Give me a guy on second base with one out, with a chance to drive him in. It doesn't work. I mean, if Yandy Diaz makes that play on Travis Shaw, it doesn't work.
Sure, but it did, right? And think about how it did. And if you're the Yankees, do you get the sac fly? I mean, that's the difference. And how good was Kike Hernandez in that series? My God.
He was great in that series. I mean, he was great. Their bullpen was great. But again, we want to put all this blame on Aaron Boone. And I would say to those people, you can only manage what you have. It's like, all those people that used to call us when we did actually talk hockey in Rangers and having six alternative captains and Mika getting the big contract extension, but they would call in, and especially in that Washington game, they would crush Quinny. How come this team doesn't play with grit? Well, because guess what?
They don't have that guy.
They haven't given him any.
Right.
I know he wants to play with grit, but you can't force guys. He doesn't have the personnel to do it. So there's something to be said, too, about, I mean, roster construction, too, because there are – clearly, when you watch the Red Sox play, I mean, Kike Hernandez is a good example of that. There's some good athletes on that Red Sox team.
Very good. Very good. And they're a deep team, and they're young, and they're only going to get better because you love their general manager.
In all honesty, though, seriously, like, how many guys do you think that if Aaron Boone was like, hey, fellas, you know what I want to do here? I want to sack bunt. Let's get this guy over. That are actually capable of
not Judge, not Stanton, right? But you wouldn't bunt with those guys anyhow. LeMahieu certainly, I think, could get down a bunt.
Yeah, but are you going to bunt with LeMahieu probably? Maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
They don't have a bunch of guys that you feel comfortable. Like, okay, this is what I need you to do. I need you to go bunt.
Maybe two or three guys. Probably Urshela. Probably Gardner. LeMahieu,
but I think that
could do it.
But for me, that's probably the best defense of Aaron Boone, is that when he was given a certain personnel that was, you know, young and athletic, he managed completely differently. I mean, they're taking the extra base. They're stealing bases. I mean, that was a fun team. But, I mean, that's not normally what he has to work with.
Nope. You got to play with what you have. You're right. All right. Can we get to some calls?
Please.
I feel like you're standing in the way.
No, I'm not. I'm trying to enhance the experience.
Well, it's enhanced, and I'd like to get to some calls. I'd like to hear from Will in the car. Good morning, Will.
I'm like the lotion.
Good morning, boys. How are you?
Good. What's going on, Will?
Frustrated Giant and Yankee fan. I'm hanging in there. I'm on my way to work. My biggest point about Boone is, and I compare him to Joe Girardi, during his 10 years there, he took teams that were chicken poop and turned them into chicken salad. Boone has almost done the opposite. Now, granted, he has to manage with what the players he has, okay, and the players didn't perform, all right, like they should have, but that's my biggest point. You know, with tough love that Girardi had, I thought it was necessary and needs to be out there. You know, and I don't think Boone could bring that to the table. What do you guys think?
Yeah, see, I disagree. I mean, when you look at, what you just said, that Aaron Boone makes chicken poop out of chicken salad. When you look at their, and I hate to start using like numbers and all this other garbage, but I mean, you look at their run differential, they should have won 86 games. They won 92. So they actually outperformed what they should have been. So I don't think that's fair to say that Aaron Boone is the reason why they didn't, you know, win the division and reach the expectations that we all had for them.
The fact that the Yankees should have been an 86-win team is an embarrassment.
No, I don't disagree, but is that Aaron Boone, or is that the team Aaron Boone was given?
Well, whatever. I'm not putting all the blame on Boone. I'm just saying the fact that with that team, with that bullpen, with that roster, that they should have won 86 instead of the 92 they won is an embarrassment.
Listen, Dave, I don't think any Yankees fan would disagree with you. But again, I mean, Aaron Boone's not out there swinging the bat with runners in scoring position. I mean, this team had a hard time scoring runs, which is the opposite of what we thought was going to happen with this team. They were going to bludgeon teams offensively, and they would shut you down with their bullpen. Starting pitching actually ended up being one of the strengths of the team. It was the offense that
again,
was the problem again.
In the big spot, the offense let them down. George in Baltimore. Let's go down to Maryland and say good morning to George. You're on 98.7.
Good morning, guys. And one thing I love about your show is that you really talk facts that make sense. And I love you guys. I truly do. I mean, everything you're saying is so true. Now, I'm not an anti-Boone guy. I think he did a masterful job managing around injuries and everything like that. Where I put a lot of the blame is on Cashman. And here's the deal. Do you know who closed the game out for the Tampa Rays last night? I mean, for the Red Sox to shut down the Rays last night?
Garrett Whitlock.
Yeah. Yeah, the guy who we didn't protect in the Rule 5 draft.
But come on,
and
you know
the guy
what?
Who
you know what, George,
protect,
here's the
Christie.
Thing. Though. Here's the thing. That happens all the time. So if you're gonna beat up the Yankees, where look, you play Urshela. Urshela was available to any team in baseball that wanted him. Colin McHugh started that game, right? He was a Met. Chris Flexen had a great year. He was a Met. So you're gonna play the game that one guy got away from the Yankees? That's not fair.
It's not only just one guy, though. It's one guy that was really good against the Yankees, and oh, by the way, is now on the Boston Red Sox. But, I mean, you can't keep everybody. I mean, I'm sure you could have the same conversation about, you know, why didn't we see, you know, what the Yankees saw in Clay Holmes or Luke Voit, or, I mean, you name it. I mean, Cashman has made a lot of really good moves like that, and, I mean, you're going to make some mistakes. I think the one thing about Cashman that I will hold against him is that he has, at times, been stubborn, is the word I'll use, to move on from players. Right? Like, there was a bit of him being stubborn not to move Glaber. There was, you know, maybe overvaluing some of his talent a little bit. Like, maybe this is the time to move away from Luke Voit. Like, there were some decisions that could have been made that weren't. Like, we'll hold on to Miguel Andujar. And now you look at these guys and, I mean, what are you going to get from Miguel Andujar or Luke Voit? Nothing.
Oh, you're going to get nothing for them.
Nothing.
Nothing.
So, I mean, there was a time to pull the trigger with a couple of these guys and get maximum value, and I think that time has passed.
Yeah, but that's a problem. I mean, really good GMs, they capitalize when a guy's stock is at the highest, and they get rid of them, and then they let them fall apart on other teams, not with your team.
No, I understand that. But also, I mean, there is something to be said about, I mean, he goes and, you know, and picks up an Urshela. Do you really think after the season that Miguel Andujar, you know, came off of in his rookie year where he should have won Rookie of the Year, that, you know, with injuries and everything else, Urshela was going to step in, who we knew could play good defense, but all of a sudden now could contribute offensively and he would take over the job? And you felt like you couldn't put Andujar back there? You know what I mean? Like, it's, we act like it's easy to, like, forecast these things when it really isn't.
I don't think it's easy. I just think that there are other teams that do it considerably better than the Yankees do at the moment, would be my analysis.
But I think
a lot of
the reasons why those teams do it, though, is because there's financial incentive to do it. Like, the reason why the Rays move off of players is because financially they have to. Like, I need to move off Willy Adames or Blake Snell, you know, because financially it makes the most sense because I got a young guy who's cheaper waiting.
Yes, I understand that they're forced into that situation. Mike Tenenbaum is with us. Before he joins us, let me let you know that Straight Talk is brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract and no compromise. And cars, homes, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and more at progressive.com. You've been a stranger. We appreciate a couple minutes. He is the great, talented Mike Tenenbaum. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Let me get right to it, guys. I assume that you guys fly commercial. You know, I'm just on with Keyshawn, Jay, Will, and Max, and those three guys all fly private, so good to be back with people I'm presuming fly commercial like I do.
Yeah. Rick went away recently, he flew first class to the big NHL meetings for ESPN.
First of all, I drove all the way to Florida on vacation. I was forced to fly because it was a meeting in Chicago.
What compartment were you in on the flight?
I was initially coach, And then all of a sudden, when I checked in, I got the update on my phone that gave me the option. I'm not going to just turn my nose.
Well, they gave you the option. Who's going to Mike, you could sit in coach with people slobbering on you, or you can have beautiful warm cookies in first class. Oh, you know what? I'll take coach. No one would do that.
Hey, Rick, thanks so much for saying hello when you got to Florida. I know, like, when I go to Long Island, the first thing I think about is, like, where's DiPietro? And I guess under the doctrine of reciprocity, like, maybe my friendship meant a little bit more to me than it does to you.
No, see, here's the difference, though. You're on the bougie coast. This is why I'm truly a man of the people. You're on the bougie coast. I'm on the the low-key coast.
Well, we could have met in the middle.
Maybe I like you very much, Mike. Can our friendship go to the next level?
100%. Because, Dave, I know if you were down in Florida, you would absolutely look me up.
I'd want to go get food with you. I would.
Let's break some bread.
Well, I'd love to break some bread. All right. We got some stuff to get into today. Obviously, the Gruden story is the first one to lead off with here. It's a terrible story, Mike. And I don't even know what question I specifically have for you. I'm so bothered by it. And I guess if I was like an Eric Bieniemy, if I was a Lewis Riddick, I would see this kind of stuff and be like, you know what? I feel even more upset today not having a job than I did the other day because this kind of stuff is going on behind closed doors.
Yeah, it's unbelievably disappointing. And the fact that it went on for as many years as it did, like, you know, this was a really fast-moving story, guys. You know, it started Friday night and it sounded like, okay, he made a mistake. There was an email. And then, wow, like what came out last night, it was a tidal wave. And obviously it just ended the absolute only way it could have. And it was just a matter of if not when. But boy, it was disappointing to hear that that went on for as long as it did.
Yeah, Mike, I mean, he burned every single bridge, right? I mean, there's no chance that John Gruden ends up back coaching anywhere, right?
Gosh, I just don't see that scenario. I mean, hopefully he gets some help and realizes, like, you know, what he did and how hurtful it was. And yeah, I would just be shocked. Like, I don't see a scenario where he comes back.
The Raiders had to do this. Like, if he didn't resign, which I know he did, I know Mark Davis is completely in love with him, but you'd think they would have had to have fired him, right?
Yeah, there's no question. Again, it wasn't a matter of if, but how and when. And unfortunately, I've been in that situation a couple times where decisions have to be made. You go behind closed doors and say, hey, like, we're leaving this room where you're not part of the organization. How do you want that to look? Do you want to resign? And those are obviously very hard conversations to have, but that's clearly what those two gentlemen had to talk about behind closed doors. It's over. Do you want to resign? Yes or no?
The great Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on the show, who I will be at some point meeting in the middle of Florida to to get together. Mike, I know Dave's going to ask you about his Giants, but, I mean, Jets, in a game I thought that was, especially after what we saw against Tennessee, defense sacks Tannehill, you know, seven times, no Calvin Ridley in this game. It was a winnable game. Falcons defense isn't great, and that was probably the most frustrated I've been as a Jets fan. Another awful start. Zach Wilson didn't look good at all. My question to you is this, is how is it through 5 weeks it can still look this bad early in games for the Jets?
Yeah, look, developing quarterbacks, guys, is hard. Like, we've talked about this for a long time with Daniel Jones. We're seeing it with Mac Jones, Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields. Like, there's going to be some more inconsistencies. The part that if we were coaching him, I would talk about is, like, hit the layup. You got to hit the layups. Like, don't worry about hitting the three-pointer every time, because we saw the splash plays against Tennessee. That's why they drafted him. He can make incredible plays, but he's got to hit the checkdowns, the balls in the flat. I think his fundamentals have a ways to go. And I think what we saw from Lamar Jackson last night, guys, is an example of a very talented young player who has great character, who worked on his weaknesses of getting the ball down the field, and now is unstoppable. And from the Jets' standpoint, Zach Wilson has great character as well. Those are the things he's going to have to work on. But if we're having this conversation in a month, you know, be it on the radio or in person in Florida, the same thing would be – there are going to be more inconsistencies. Now, defensively, that was a bad day at the office. Like, that was a Falcon offense that was predictable. You knew where the ball was going to go. I thought they would have been played better. But Zach Wilson's going to take a minute to get to the next level.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Mike, are you surprised? Because I think you thought the Giants would be better than this. They look lost. And what I know Rick is really surprised about, and so am I, is their defense is so bad. I mean, that was the strength of the team last year. You thought they'd be better offensively, and they have been for the most part, but the defense stinks right now.
You know, Dave, I think they're just a hard evaluation because, look, Daniel Jones, to me, like, I don't know who in the world they could get that's better than Daniel Jones. Like, I think he's sort of solidified himself, so that's good news. But when you're decimated with injuries like they are, especially on offense, like it's a hard evaluation. I think Blake Martinez, to me, is a great example of sometimes there's players that have tremendous intangibles, and I think that's what we're seeing. They lost their quarterback on defense.
No, I know you say that, though, Mike, but I mean, the reason why I think Dave and I both felt, even with the loss of Blake Martinez,
was
this defense would still be good was because they're secondary. I mean, you're getting McKinney back healthy. You added Dory Jackson. You know, Bradbury had an amazing season last season. And, I mean, for me, he's probably the biggest culprit so far this season. James Bradbury, he doesn't look like the same player this season.
Yeah, he's played poorly, and they ran right by him the other day. And I thought with Leonard Williams, Azeez Ojulari, who I really like coming out, I thought they had a couple of pressure players up front with Martinez. Like, you need players at all three levels of your defense. And I agree, like, Dory Jackson's durability has been an issue, but he's a great athlete. He has great foot quickness. I agree. I thought they were going to play better. I think McKinney is a good player. I don't know if he's great because I don't know about his range in the middle of the field. But Bradbury, to me, like, he's got to be a guy that they could play man-to-man with and hold up. And right now, he can't do that.
If things spiral out of control, and we don't know how long Barkley, Jones, Galladay, any of these guys are going to be out as far as right now. But if things spiral out of control and the Giants go, I don't know, 3-14, 4-13, could you see them cleaning house from top to bottom and just starting from scratch again?
Yeah, I certainly hope they don't because, like, to me, Joe Judge and Daniel Jones, like, I think that's a very intriguing pair. And again, you're trying to develop, like, two incredibly difficult positions in New York. And if you're going to move on from Joe Judge, who are you going to get? And how do you know the quarterback's going to be developed any better? So I think I would be a little bit more patient. I thought Andrew Thomas was taking massive strides this year. So it's not perfect by any stretch, but I do think they have a really good foundation. I believe in Joe Judge. I think it's a hard evaluation when you're missing seven stars on offense, like, and you're trotting out Mike Glennon against Dak Prescott. You know, I'm not so sure if Nuke Rockne can win that matchup.
Let me ask you a question, though, Mike, and this is something that it kind of annoyed me a little bit and probably would have been more if I was an actual Giants fan. So we were asking all towards the end of last week because Andrew Thomas, who's played really well for the Giants this season, I mean, he's your left tackle, hobbled, coming off the ankle injury. We kept asking, you know, will he play, will he play? He ends up being active, and then we see Nate Solder at left tackle, who clearly can't play left tackle anymore, and Andrew Thomas is on the bench. Like, why even have him dressed and active if there's no chance he's going to play in that game?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I would say this, Rick, like, sometimes you have discussions with trainers that say, hey, like, he's not ready today. In an emergency, he can get you through 15, 20 plays. It's not ideal, but sometimes a player that could give you 15 plays is way better than a practice squad offensive lineman that's just not ready to play. So I know it's a weird optic. It's unusual. It happened the other day, but that's usually the reason why.
Mike, we appreciate you. You don't know what you've just done, though. By you telling him that was a great question, his day is now made. I mean, he's going to walk around with an aura that you can't even imagine. You think I'm kidding. We're on a Zoom call right now. He's flexing. He's genuflecting. Like, it's very unattractive. So I love you. I'd like to break bread with you down in Florida. Remember, he avoids you at all costs, but now you have made him into a conquering hero in his home today.
I was just hoping to get a chai latte from you guys. I mean, it's been a minute here. I'm thirsty. I'm not hydrated. It's early. I thought, you know, my buddies would have, you know, my favorite Starbucks drink, but, you know, I guess I'm going to have to go get my own.
Soy, too, by the way, just so you know. Soy, well, I got it. Trust me, I got it. Nice and hot.
He knows what you like. Mike, we appreciate you. We will talk to you sooner rather than later. Have a great day. We'll talk
to you. All right. Great to be on with you guys. Hope you're doing well.
Thanks so much. That, of course, is Mike Tenenbaum. I'm a fan. I mean, he's very good. And the fact that you got the great question is just, it's gross.
And by the way, too, speaking of all the injuries with the Giants, I mean, if Daniel Jones doesn't start that game so poorly throwing the football and isn't, like, crazy inaccurate on that throw to Saquon Barkley, he probably doesn't get hurt there, by the way.
He definitely doesn't get hurt there.
Because that was
a terrible throw. It was wide open. And then you had to play to Tony where he dropped that. I mean, Tony was sensational, but early on in that first drive, he should have caught that third down pass. It was a disaster. That entire game was a disaster. Now, you can get a Samsung Galaxy A32 5G for only $299. No contract. Straight Talk Wireless. 5G capable device required. Actual availability, coverage, and speed may vary. Let's go to the three stars of the day.
Today's three stars.
And we start at
number three
with Mark Andrews for proving
tight ends don't score 40 points in fantasy football.
Dave wrong. Yes, they do. And Dave, you lost your fantasy game.
I don't understand. I really don't. You claim to be my best friend. Do you know, you've known me for years. I think we have a great relationship. Why it gives everyone such enjoyment to watch me miserable?
Isn't that why we have you on?
Number two.
Goes posthumously to Gordon Damer.
It's Damer and DePietro and...
not dead.
Still. Everybody?
He did that. He facilitated that in the summer, and it still keeps giving us some great material. And number one goes to...
Number one.
Our very own Rick DiPietro for being part of the NHL back on ESPN tonight. Pittsburgh, Tampa, followed by Kraken, Golden Knights.
All for hockey.
Right here on ESPN.
The Kraken is a mother. It's a mythological sea monster.
It's a mother. It's a mythological sea monster. There you have it. Hockey is back. Rangers in action tomorrow. When do the Islanders open?
Islanders open up in Carolina.
Is that tomorrow as well?
I think that's on Thursday.
Oh, Rangers home opener on Thursday.
Yeah,
I'm very excited.
Six alternative captains because no one clearly stepped up.
You know what? We're going places this year. Let's see how you handle this one. Rule 76.
No excuses. Play like a champion. It's DiPietro, Rothenberg, and
everybody on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast. Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker by asking it to play 98.7 ESPN.